From Capital Public Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Beth Ruyak. We are in a rapid growth time of coronavirus in California and across the country. Change is happening fast. If you went to the Kings game in Sacramento last night, you saw this firsthand. So we're going to start the program with longtime sports and Sacramento Kings broadcaster Gary Gerald. The G-Man, I'm happy to say, is joining us by phone. Hi, Gary. Glad to have you back on Insight.
Thank you, Beth. Good morning.
So first question, what do you think of the NBA's decision to suspend the season? That happened before the game last night at the Golden 1 Center.
Well, we were sitting collectively before our pregame show talking about, you know, so many different things that are impacting today's world when news of the league decision came, and obviously it was stunning to everyone. And Beth, I think, you know, frankly, most of us, over the years, we've become conditioned to look at sports as kind of an escape from real life. And to suddenly have real life intruding into our sanctuary, our playground, so to speak, I don't want to trivialize it, but it was just like, wow, this was pretty hard to digest. And I'm still having a hard time kind of wrapping my mind around what has transpired, because it's not only the National Basketball Association now, it's impacting any kind of public gathering. And sports events, because they create so much notoriety, publicity, one thing or another, are probably very high on that list. But to see now what's happening with various athletic conferences, colleges, universities, saying, you know, we're putting a stop to this, at least temporarily. The Major League Soccer has now done the same thing. And it just, who knows how long this goes on, who knows where it goes, you know, what the impact may be. And it's just, you know, it's a small aside to the real concerns of a very serious situation, obviously, to the medical community and to everyone around the world. It's bizarre.
We learned yesterday that a Utah Jazz player, Rudy Gobert, had tested positive for COVID-19. And I know you saw the news today, Gary, that a second Utah Jazz player, Donovan Mitchell, has tested positive as well. The Kings game against the Pelicans last night was going to happen. Where were you during all this decision-making, and how did that conversation go behind the scenes?
Well, our broadcast vantage point is at plaza level at Golden 1 Center, so we're well off the floor. I was part of the early stages of our pregame show, which is done up on the concourse level at a different location. So I go to the broadcast position after I've completed my part of the early pregame show, and I'm watching as the Kings come out and take the floor and the Pelicans do not, and I'm thinking, okay, this is a little bit strange. I'm going to keep a pretty close eye on this and to see, you know, what time they actually come to the floor. And normally teams, about the latest you would see them on what they call the countdown clock that leads to the blow-off, the national anthem, the introduction of starting lineups, is no later than like 13 minutes. The Kings are on the floor roughly 15, 16 minutes on the countdown clock. Well, this now gets inside 10 minutes, and then I realize I don't see any officials on the floor. And then a social media report from Sam Amick, who is a longtime NBA follower, writes for The Athletic now, formerly for USA Today, before that the Sacramento Bee.
Right.
I've known Sam for years and years, and he has a report that one of the officials, Courtney Kirkland, had worked the Utah Jazz game on Monday night against Toronto, and consequently that was leading to a delay. And then we later find out that apparently the Pelicans were not willing. They did not want to play. The Kings were informed of the situation. They were on the floor warming up. They were ready and wanted to play. This was a very significant ball game for both of these teams in terms of possible playoff aspirations, et cetera. So I'm babbling a bit here about what that situation was like. I was not privy to any on-hand discussions. I'm just an observer. And I've been around the game long enough to know that when the officials aren't on the floor, something is wrong. Then the lead official and his associate, Mark Davis, the lead official, Justin Van Dyne, who was another of the trio, came onto the floor, and I thought, maybe we'll play with just two officials tonight. But then I watched them and their interaction with people at the scorer's table, and still no Pelicans on the floor. And then I realized, as I watched Mark Davis and Justin Van Dyne retreat across the floor, headed to the tunnel and the locker room for the officials, that this was obviously a very serious situation and that the likelihood was rapidly becoming that we would not be playing basketball.
The NBA's announcement said the game was canceled out of an abundance of caution. We have a couple fan reactions, Gary, so listen to these clips with us. Here's the first one.
Mm-hmm. Like, were you guys inside?
Yeah, we were inside.
Like seated, ready to go?
Yeah, we were ready to go, man. And then they put the thing on the Jumbotron, and everybody's reaction, everybody started booing. It's kind of crazy. Like, we understand completely, like, where they're coming from. But, I mean, just, like, as a fan, like, selfishly, like, I would like the game to continue. But, I mean, we understand, though. It's kind of crazy, though. But
so that was one reaction. But in reality, there was also this. So you're going to hear another fan right now.
Man, I was ready to go. You see, I got my flag. I was about to go buy me a jersey and everything, man. It was crazy. It sucks. I'm mad. I'm hurt.
We're in, as you described, Gary, an interesting situation where people want ordinary real life to go on, especially if this virus hasn't impacted their immediate world. And yet the wave of what's coming is so big right now that precautions are being taken everywhere.
Yeah, and no one can predict exactly what's going to happen in terms of the future. This is a great unknown, and it pertains to far more than the sports realm and the sports world. I understand fans' frustration. I was frustrated. I was looking forward to, doing my job, and now there's this cloud of uncertainty. But when you try to look at the big picture and try to have perspective, I think the concerns are legitimate. I don't want to be one who overreacts, but this is a different world for all of us. And, when it strikes closer to home, suddenly the perspective changes, I think, rather dramatically. And so you hear frustration from fans. I understand that. But in the long haul, safety of fans, of everyone involved, is of paramount importance. And I think that's what the league, in terms of the NBA and various other sports leagues, are now having to deal with. And it's a very fluid situation, as we know. It changes by the hour.
Well,
I came home last night, and I thought, what in the world happened over the span of 3 hours? It just, was astounding.
Let's say it's changing by the minute, Gary. I have some breaking news for you. ESPN is reporting that the Big Ten, the SEC, and the American Athletic Conferences have canceled their tournaments, and we're still awaiting a decision from the NCAA regarding the men's and women's basketball tournaments, which are going on at this point, but to be played without fans in attendance. What do you think of that?
Well, I had seen this just before we went on the air, that the Big Ten and the ACC and the other conferences were making that decision. I don't think there's any doubt in my mind, and it's just one person's opinion, because of these various tournaments that result in play-in opportunities in the NCAA men's and women's tournaments. I don't think that the NCAA will have any choice other than to postpone the tournament, and whether or not, I don't know if they will cancel the tournament or if it'll simply be postponed and wait to see how these things begin to play out and are pushed back further in the calendar. The ripple effect from something like this is so vast that I don't think any of us can even come close to beginning to comprehend just the aspect of availability for arenas and sports facilities. And this is only the sports world that we're talking about. And again, to many, that may be totally insignificant. But just the ripple effect of trying to find usage and calendar time to get these buildings, these are things that are normally planned out months, if not years, in advance. So it's got huge implications, no question.
I guess you somewhat answered what now. I did note on the calendar that the last time the Kings played the Jazz was January 18th, if the calendar was correct. So any transmission that would have been very early in the arc of this disease, anything would have shown up. Are you thinking and kind of recounting where you've been in your job over the last days and weeks and whether there might have been any exposure for you?
Well, I think you're tempted to try to do that. But then by the same token, I think, well, the reality is, what good does any of that do? if you've been exposed to it and it shows up, you go from there. But I don't know that there's any situations that I can immediately put my fingers on and would say, okay, this puts me in a situation where perhaps I'm compromised or jeopardized. I haven't thought much about that, Beth.
All right. Well, we're going to stay in touch about this for now. The NBA has suspended its season. As we said, Major League Soccer has suspended its season. I think we're going to see more positive tests before this starts to wind down. And Gary, I appreciate talking with you. I appreciate your perspective, both in looking at sports with all the zeal and excitement that so many people do, and also the reality of the times that we're in right now. You've been doing this for decades and decades. You've been the radio voice of the Kings since 1985. Ever anything like this before in your career?
Nothing of this magnitude even approaches it. There was a situation, I recall, in the 90s, significant was that the Northridge earthquake. Kings were in L.A., and we were all jolted out of bed at an airport hotel that morning, and we awoke to what looked like an Armageddon. When you turned on the television, there was still power in the hotel. The game ended up being postponed, and the Kings traveled back to Sacramento. That was very, very unusual. There was a situation, I think, 3 years ago in Philadelphia where there was a condensation on the floor that resulted in a lengthy delay of well over 2 hours before the league ended up postponing that game. But those are isolated instances and one game only. Nothing anywhere near the magnitude of what we're now experiencing in all of professional sports, all of amateur sports.
All right. Thank you, Gary. Again, I appreciate the conversation today.
Thank you, Beth.
Take care, too. That's longtime Kings broadcaster Gary Gerald joining us by phone from his home. Before the NBA decision and the Kings game, President Trump had given a national address. He announced that in response to the declaration of a global pandemic, flights from Europe to the U.S., excluding the U.K. or Ireland, would be banned for 30 days starting this Friday. This would not apply to U.S. citizens returning home. Here's more of what the president said.
We are moving very quickly. The vast majority of Americans, the risk is very, very low. Young and healthy people can expect to recover fully and quickly if they should get the virus. The highest risk is for elderly population with underlying health conditions. The elderly population must be very, very careful.
So the situation is changing rapidly. We just received a statement from Sacramento State. Many of you know that we broadcast from the campus. But Sac State is going to start transitioning courses to online delivery for the remainder of the spring semester. Instruction, we're told, will be suspended from Monday, March 16th to the 19th to allow faculty time to prepare. Campus itself is not closing. The business offices are going to stay open. And beginning Friday, March 20th, all courses will then be conducted online. So, California is, and if you haven't realized this, I don't think I'm saying anything that will surprise you, becoming one of the coronavirus epicenters in the United States. Cap Radio State Government reporter Scott Rodd is with me in the studio, and the governor made some new recommendations last night. Hi, Scott. Glad to have you here.
Good morning, Beth.
So let's cover some of what the governor recommended last night.
Sure. So the governor said he recommended that large gatherings of 250 people or more should be canceled or postponed. This was at the direction of public health officials in California. And he also strongly suggested that smaller gatherings that where people can't have social distancing, which is, about 6 feet between people, those should also be canceled or postponed. And I believe he said through March, and it seems like this is something that they will continue to revisit, and monitor to see how the situation develops.
There's a lengthy release with these headings: state efforts to assist California workers, community guidance from the California Department of Public Health, what to do if you're sick, and the response to COVID-19. So I think the state is trying to centralize the information. We'll post all of that on our website. But this is an ongoing situation that I think people expected to hear often from him and his administration. And that, in fact, is happening.
Yeah. I mean, he has been holding press conferences, you know, on a daily or semi-daily basis. He is giving, you know, regular updates on this. And so this has very much become sort of front and center for his administration and for, the rest of California state government, including the legislature.
Testing isn't something covered in this press release, but going back to Tuesday, he spent quite a bit of time talking about the testing ramping up in labs to a level of about 5,000, 5,500 tests a day. Didn't discourage anybody, though, from going to the doctor to ask for a test or at least consulting about a test.
The messaging, yeah, has been that testing is ramping up, that more kits are becoming available. And yeah, there was encouragement that if you believe that you may have, if you have symptoms that resemble COVID-19, certainly get in touch with your doctor and, you know, don't be afraid to speak up and ask for a test.
Scott, you were out last night at the Kings game and you actually collected those fan comments that we heard. I want to go back to Tuesday's press conference and play some of the exchange that happened at that time. I think the Warriors game had been canceled in San Francisco due to concerns and just the large crowd that would happen at the Warriors game. But let's listen to a little bit of off the cuff in the exchange that happened with the governor regarding sporting events and other big events. And again, this goes back to Tuesday.
You are asking me my personal opinion about large events like sporting events. I found it quite curious, and I mean this with respect, may not come across this way, but I found it quite curious that the four major organizations, NHL, soccer, Major League Baseball and the NBA put out guidelines to protect their athletes, but not their fans. And I found that curious. And I think they owe you and their fan base an answer as to why is it more important to keep you as reporters away from their players in the locker room than keeping fans in highly contagious parts of the country together. So I think it is incumbent upon not only those leagues, but I agree with you, local health officials, to assess the conditions and make those determinations. And I can assure you those will be forthcoming.
Okay, so what a difference a couple days make. That just happens. But Scott, I'm going to turn that a little bit. Here's the governor and his team making recommendations. What about under the dome? What about lawmakers and the legislature itself conducting business and being together?
Before I jump into that, I just want to go back real quick. I believe that that comment was made actually after the Warriors were going to hold a game without fans. And then the next day, I believe, you know, they said we're going to, you know, not hold games. This just shows how rapidly this situation is evolving, that, you know, there are messages coming out rapid fire. I'm actually texting people at the Capitol right now as we speak while sitting here in the studio.
And I have an update, too, here. It looks like CIF, the high school basketball tournament that was supposed to happen at Golden One Center this weekend, has now officially been canceled. As is another event that a lot of people in this area might know, Authors on the Move, the literary event with authors coming in from all over Northern California. That event has been canceled as well.
Yeah. So, I mean, rapid fire. I mean, the announcements are just coming one after another. And, you know, I think I do want to emphasize that, you know, even though these updates are coming so quickly and at such a rapid clip, these are being done out of an abundance of caution. You know, these cancellations are happening because they want to try to mitigate the spread. So I think it's important to put it into context that, you know, this isn't cause for panic. it's just important to keep in sort of context that these cancellations are happening as the state and counties and local governments try to mitigate what's happening. But back to the Capitol, as I said, I just got a statement from Senate Pro Tem Toni Atkins, and I'm just going to read from it. She says, quote, "This is not business as usual. We are actively examining ways to do the people's business within these unprecedented and evolving parameters and are working in collaboration with the governor and assembly to determine how to best help our public and private sector workforce." So they're clearly referencing the announcement last night from the governor's office,
right,
suspending or encouraging the suspension or postponement of large gatherings and encouraging, you know, social distancing at small spaces. I'm also in touch right now via text with the Assembly Speaker's office. They reiterated that and said, you know, this is not exactly business as usual. They also said that they're aware of no one in the Assembly or among its staff that has tested positive for COVID-19. And they said that it looks like they would not consider that information confidential and would take steps to ensure the safety of staff and legislators if that was the case. So, I mean, what comes to mind for me is, you know, this announcement came from the governor's office, you know, to suspend large gatherings. And now you're seeing the legislature try to grapple with, well, how do we meet that mandate that came from the state? I mean, there are more than 250 lawmakers, legislators, mm-hmm. Lawmakers, lobbyists, and staff members, certainly in the Capitol. If you've been in any of these hearing rooms, you'll see that they could be pretty cramped. There's not a lot of room for social distancing. Even the desks on the floor of the Assembly and Senate, they're not 6 feet apart.
Right.
So social distancing is not going to be happening at the legislature. So, you know, it's clear that they're on top of this, but, you know, it's rapidly evolving. I would say, you know, I don't have I don't exactly have the historical sort of perspective of this, but it seems like what's happening here in some ways is unprecedented in terms of the state grappling with this.
I think you're pretty safe saying that, Scott. Another update here. The Democratic National Committee has moved Sunday's presidential debate between former Vice President Joe Biden and Senator Bernie Sanders from Phoenix to Washington, to the Capitol, because of concerns about the virus. There will be more to come about that. Stay with us here, Scott. I am going to connect on the phone with Denise Morse. She is in quarantine with her husband, David, at Travis Air Force Base. They were passengers on the Grand Princess cruise ship. And we've been checking in with Denise all through the week. Are you there now, Denise?
I am, Beth. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. How are things for you? How are conditions there? I know we spoke to you yesterday and you were getting concerned and more concerned.
Right. And I've been listening to your interviews and I'm encouraged. No, I'm encouraged to hear that the governor's got this mandate to suspend gatherings of 250 or more. And I'm wondering if he or the CDC are going to apply that to us. We are like an incubator here with roughly 650 people in this building, medical support staff, 100 at least. I spoke with one this morning. Support staff with security. They've got a fence around the perimeter of this facility. It's a four-story building. It's kind of shaped like a W, and we're housed here, completely not following the protocol that's being recommended that you're talking about as I listen. The not having large gatherings. Who's protecting us? I mean, it sounds like outside of this facility, you're doing everything you can to protect the people. And in this facility, ironically, we're living exactly as we shouldn't be living. My husband and I asked for coronavirus test this morning. They said they don't have any. They told us we'd be taking our temperatures. They would take our temperatures twice a day. We've received, well, today once, yesterday once. We have very little information. I watched the news at night and I'm hearing what the measures are being put in place, and they're certainly not happening here.
Denise, can I interrupt you? Would you repeat again what you said about test kits and testing?
We asked for a test this morning. They said that they don't have any.
As in they don't have test kits at Travis Air Force Base?
Well, they may have them at the base, but they are not available to us. If we don't show symptoms, I guess, we don't get tested. When we were on the Grand Princess, we were given an order that said we would be tested when we came to Travis Air Force Base. We have not been tested, and they don't plan to test us. We've been told we will stay here for 14 days. We were given a notice from the CDC that was the quarantine notice that it says that there would be a 72-hour reassessment, which will be today. And the reassessment evidently has, I haven't heard, but we asked whoever was an authority here if this reassessment has been done, and they said we would be here for 14 days.
So, Denise, you and your husband have not ever had any symptoms. Am I correct in that?
That's correct. And we have, and you know that college students aren't taking cruises in late March. These are the exact group of people that are high risk. We have people that are the average age, 60 probably. We have people in wheelchairs. We have people that are very compromised, and they are struggling, and it's heartbreaking. We feel like we are protecting they're protecting the public by holding us here, but who is protecting us?
So, Denise, have you become insistent or started to speak up louder with any other passengers about this situation and to push for a change?
Well, it's interesting you say that. Human nature is really funny. I think a lot of people are, you know, they're kind of bucking up and wanting to be cheerful, and they're going along with standing in long lines. The food is given to us in an area where we have to congregate. They still have not changed the procedure for coffee. We serve our own coffee. My husband and I skip the coffee. We take the stairs. I spoke to a couple of people about my concerns, and their response was, well, there's nothing we can do about it. Well, you know, there is something we can do about it. And I'm grateful to be able to talk to you to get this out, because we're not heard in here. And we would be much better off to be at home, taking care of ourselves at home. My husband and I are taking stairs. We're trying to stay outside. And I just looked at the weather forecast. We've got rain coming for the next 3, 4, 5 days, and that is going to be really challenging.
So with the quarantine length, and by the way, that quarantine recommendation, I think, as you know, has been changing for some places, including Sacramento County, Yolo County, Placer County.
Yes.
But you could be there under that direction for another, 11 days or so, 10, 11, 12 days?
Yes.
Okay. Well, Denise, we appreciate staying in touch with you. We're going to continue this conversation. If anything in your situation changes, please reach out and let us know. And I just have to hope that what you're saying is being heard by some people who can evaluate whether, as you're saying, this is the wisest thing.
Right. Well, I appreciate the time that you've let me speak. So we'll keep you posted.
Okay. You and David, take care.
Thank you, Beth. Bye-bye.
So that's Denise Morse. We've been speaking with her every day from when she was on the Grand Princess at the Port of Oakland to now in quarantine at Travis Air Force Base. Scott Rodd is with me in the CAP Radio studio. There is additional news to talk about in Capital Chat, but when you hear a story like that and you see what's going on, it's hard to imagine how people live this kind of split rail life of proceeding with things unrelated to the coronavirus and COVID-19 and then living in that reality.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, life goes on, news goes on. I mean, there are a lot of other things that are happening outside of coronavirus, although this, you know, coronavirus does tend to touch on them quite a bit. But yeah, certainly it is almost a sort of a duality where you have to remind yourself, both in living life, but also covering the news, that there's a lot more that's going on just, you know, even outside of coronavirus. You know, one of those things, one of those updates that we got was the California Horse Racing Board released finally its report. Its investigation into the deaths of 23 of the horses that died at Santa Anita Raceway last year between December 26th and March 30th, I believe, 2019. So that was an important update that we got.
And the essential conclusion of that report was?
No clear underlying cause for any of them. There wasn't one specific thing that they were able to point to. They did say, which was known previously, that many of these injuries were due to fatal bone fractures or bone breaking during either training or during races. And, you know, they were able to identify that. But in terms of what caused those problems, it's unclear. They looked at track conditions, and that didn't seem to play a factor. They did find that a number of these horses showed some sort of pre-existing injury, which may or may not have been caught by trainers beforehand. They showed that many of the trainers didn't have a very strong working knowledge of horse anatomy, so that may have played a factor in it as well. So they came out with a number of recommendations, but it was a bit scattershot. There wasn't one clear sort of silver bullet that they said, this is what we need in order to address this problem.
All right. I do want to wrap this up with homelessness. Do you remember when that was the number one priority in the state and what we were all thinking and talking about? It seems like so long ago now, doesn't it?
I mean, yeah, but it certainly still is. I mean, just top of order for a lot of people. I mean, it's still very much. I mean, that issue is something that's not going away. It's a perfect example of, while there are many other news events happening, you know, it shouldn't eclipse something as important as homelessness.
Well,
certainly.
In fact, there's a crossover: coronavirus and COVID-19, and concerns for people who are homeless, who might need and not get medical treatment or be exposed, is completely woven together. There were proposals and allocations for new funding. That's one way the subject emerged at the Capitol this week, some debate about what the governor wants to do.
Exactly. So the governor, in his budget proposal, he wants to allocate $1.4 billion for spending on homelessness. That is a remarkable amount. No one disagrees that amount of spending, or at least something close to it, should be allocated. However, in terms of how that money is spent is where the disagreement lies. The governor wants to see the state play a more active role in figuring out how to administer that money and giving it to regions around the state as opposed to local governments. And this is something that he said at his State of the State in terms of how local governments are spending these funds currently.
Spending decisions have been relatively unrestricted and locally driven, but respectfully, the problem's gotten worse. And the results, they speak for themselves. This moment, it cries out for a new approach.
That approach, again, is having the state play a more active role in the spending. However, some of the mayors from the biggest cities in California, they're saying, no, the cities are where, you know, are where the most important decisions are made on homelessness. And here's San Jose Mayor Sam Liccardo at a press conference earlier this week.
We're on the front lines because cities are where the problem of homelessness is most palpable, and cities are the place where the solutions are as well.
So it took, you know, a little prying, but eventually the reporters in the room were able to get the mayors to say, look, we disagree with the mayor's with the governor's proposal to have the state really control where this funding is going. We want a more active role at the table. You know, that said, it does seem like these mayors and the governor are working closely. There's clearly a lot of mutual respect there. So it's not there's no animosity there, but there is disagreement in terms of how this money should be spent.
I wonder if the approach to coronavirus and COVID-19 ends up being some sort of a template for broad issues in the state, where the state takes the lead, but counties, local jurisdictions, organizations, and groups down to the grassroots level have to then tailor the guidelines and the information to what works best for the people most immediately in that circle.
Absolutely. I mean, I think a crisis, and I feel fairly comfortable calling coronavirus a crisis at this point, it pressure tests systems. It pressure tests how government operates from the highest level to the lowest level. And, you know, you'll see successes and you'll see areas that need improvement. And I think the best you could hope for, and I'm sure, you know, lawmakers are very much keen on this, you know, there will be improvements made in those systems as you see these pressure tests happen.
All right, Scott, it's been a big morning after a big night last night. So thank you so much for all your work. And we'll direct everybody to capradio.org to find even more information. Thanks again.
Thank you.
That's Cap Radio State Government reporter Scott Rodd. Up next, something other than coronavirus reports, although if there is news, we'll be sure to bring it to you. KCRA reporter Leticia Ordaz is here. She's written a children's book that's in English and Spanish. It's colorful and lively, and she'll share it with us next. You're listening to Insight on Cap Radio.